Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Do you ever feel like throwing up on your way to work, and it's not from the hooch you guzzled the night before? What would you do with your life if you weren't afraid? And how do you know when to hang up that soul-crushing job in order to follow your true passion? This week, philosopher and entrepreneur Brian Johnson is on the show to download what he's learned through real-life train wrecks and studying from the best. Welcome to The New Man. Today I've got Brian Johnson. He's a philosopher, entrepreneur. He's also the creator and founder of Philosopher Notes. Brian, welcome to The New Man. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Trip?
I'm doing good. I'm just going to lay it out on the line here. I am freaking jealous. I'm freezing my ass off in Boulder and you're in Bali. So
sending some warmth your way though, bro.
I'm just going to lay it on the table that there is some jealousy there, right? Or some envy right there. I'm just, it's going to be apparent here. So
that's awesome.
I'm working with it though. I'm going to work with it. So
right on.
Maybe you got a book or some philosopher notes on how I can deal with that. I'll look that up later. So, but,
you're living it.
Yeah, but I'm just so turned on by the stuff that you're doing, and we're just going to have to dive in here. Philosopher's Notes, you've done other web businesses and stuff. We could talk about that, but I talked to you a couple weeks ago, and you just laid this thing out, like, you're getting a PhD in how to live and all. Just tell me more. This is an awesome story. Tell me. Please tell me.
Awesome. Well, first of all, I appreciate your support and energy. And yeah, as we talked about, I sold my last business, Zods, almost 18 months ago now, and just got clear that wasn't my dharma anymore, wasn't my purpose. And it was actually a combination of reading some Deepak Chopra, Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Work Week, some David Data, Way the Superior Man, and just got clear that, I loved my business and I started it with a very clear intention, very clear purpose. And I got to a point where just was no longer feeding my soul and driving me. And, can give you the whole story behind that. But short story is, got clear on that, decided within 30 days I had the business sold, the money in the bank, the team transitioning, and the business is being integrated.
Wow.
And it was just clear. It took me about 2 weeks to make the decision when I had the initial epiphany. In the epiphany, we'll get into philosopher's notes, but the epiphany was Deepak Chopra, and I literally just put this link up on Twitter the other day where he's got this thing in Seven Spiritual Laws of Success where he says, if you have all the money and all the time in the world, what would you do? Right? And it was the first time, if you had all the money and all the time in the world, what would you do? And it was the first time in like 3 years my answer wasn't, I'd put it all into Zods. I'd hire this many more people. Uh-huh. I'd do this. I'd do that. And I sat there. Literally, it was kind of a meditation for me while I was reading and just in stunned kind of, the oh shitness of what I'm doing isn't that, and it's awesome, but I can't pretend that it is, And I tend to take those things pretty seriously. Mm. And I didn't have the answer at the time, but felt into it some more and just got clear that I needed to move. And so anyway, that was what catalyzed me selling the business. I spent a few months transitioning the business, and then I traveled. And I got really clear that I wanted to give myself a PhD in how to live. I wanted to go back into studying universal truths and really just doing everything I could to embody the highest truths of the greatest teachers. And then, you know, I figured that I'd get a master's when I had distilled 100 of my favorite books into summaries.
Uh-huh.
And I also knew that I'd get a master's when I created a profitable business. So my thing was, it's all about merging spirituality and economics, you know, and our philosophies and our spiritual practices with capitalism, with free markets, and with getting paid.
Wow.
And so I was pretty clear on that, but I wasn't sure how it was going to come together. And then on a flight from Tokyo to LAX, I randomly opened the Sky Mall, literally to a 2-page ad for a business that did summaries of business books.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, their slogan was concentrated knowledge for the busy executive.
Right.
And I had one of those alleluia moments of just kind of shower of epiphany of, oh, wow. And I immediately wrote down, instead of concentrated knowledge, I wrote down concentrated wisdom. Mm. And instead of for the busy executive, I wrote down for the busy self-actualizer.
Wow.
It just got clear that you know, I'd package my summaries, not really summaries, actually, they're just notes, me reflecting on the big ideas mm-hmm. of my favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, I'm all about practical philosophy. For me, is a practical concept. And the word comes from the Greek philosophia, which means lover of wisdom.
Right.
And wisdom means knowledge of life. So a true philosopher is one who's passionate about understanding how to live, not some dude or woman in an academic setting talking about theory.
Right.
It's someone who's passionate about living, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about for me. So,
and there you go. That's the PhD work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and it was kind of a trial by fire, it sounds like. I mean, your willingness to, because Zods was this, was an amazing social networking site for, you would say, conscious people or people that self-actualizers, maybe your term. But that, what, just being able to stare down the barrel of that gun of like, this isn't what I'm really passionate about anymore. Oh, shit.
Yep.
Can you say more about, I imagine there's a fork in the road, like, well, I can go the safe route and keep doing what I'm doing,
yep.
or I can look into the unknown. And I'm just curious what your process was there.
Well, you gave me goosebumps as you said that, because I think that as we talk about, you know, I appreciate, you know, you saying that my life is extraordinary at this point, and, you know, I'm really happy about what I'm doing and really proud of what I've created in a lot of ways. And I think this is one of the keys, where it's not some abstract thing or luck or any of those things. It's a lot of hard work, but it's this. At moments of decision like this, I've learned to consistently trust my instincts. And it goes back to when I was at Arthur Andersen when I started my career. I went to UCLA, studied psychology, business, started at Arthur Andersen, right, of all places, and I was an accountant, and I literally threw up my first week driving home from work. Pretty
like,
clear.
Not from excitement or too much beer,
dude,
but
no,
like, no.
No, like pulling over on the 405 driving in LA.
Oh, no.
And literally on the side of the freeway, you know, and just wasn't there, right?
Oh.
And, you know, I stayed there for 8-9 months. While I was there, I studied for the LSAT, and I just did everything I could to get into a great law school. Went to a great law school, you know, and just kind of looking for what I wanted. But I knew before I showed up there, that wasn't it.
Mm.
I lasted less than a semester and made really tough decision to drop out of law school and end a 5-year relationship in the same 24-hour period of time.
Wow.
And I just spun. At the time, I didn't have healthy practices in my consciousness and my... I didn't exercise. I didn't eat well. I didn't do any of that stuff. And it was just a really dark, challenging time for me about a dozen years ago. But at that time, the only thing I knew I wanted to do was to coach a Little League baseball team, right?
Really?
So I had this tiny inkling. Yeah, this tiny inkling of Joseph Campbell's Follow Your Bliss. You know, Carlos Castaneda, the idea of what's the path with heart? You know, where is your heart? And at the time, I was totally disillusioned and totally freaked out. And the only thing I knew I wanted to do was to coach a Little League baseball team. I did that. Fast forward a few months. This is in 1998. And I came up with the idea for my first business, which was a social networking platform, before it was called that, for teams and leagues involved in sports. It was called E-Teams. And, you know, as a bad coach, we were the Bad News Bears, you know, and as a former consultant who did some database work, I just saw that in a matter of time, every single team and league in the world would use the web for everything.
Mm.
And at the time, I couldn't make the connection transition between dropping out of law school and just saying, I can't do this, you know, and leaving the stamp. I was at a top 10 law school, you know, I was going to be guaranteed to make my six figures for whatever and moving up in the world, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, that just wasn't enough. And the only thing I knew I wanted to do at the time, which had nothing to do with making money or any of that, was work with kids. And then that turned into a business where, you know, we caught the wave in the first dot-com boom. We won a business plan competition at UCLA, raised $1 million, raised another $4 million, hired the CEO of Adidas to be our CEO. You know, I just did that whole thing. But it goes back to my instinct just wasn't quite... Well, my instinct was clear that the path I was on wasn't right. So to bring it back to the Zods thing, what I've learned is that, and I've done that a few other times, you know, in my career and in my life, where I just got to a point where everything was great. Everything I'd worked so hard to achieve was achieved on one plane. And it was just, there was this itching for more.
Yeah.
And I've learned to trust myself more. And it's become, the first time I did it was not very graceful at all. You know? In fact, it was beyond harrowing, you know, it was a train wreck, as Joseph Campbell would say.
Right.
But then, as he also says, you get far enough away from it and you realize those wrecks in your life are the greatest moments of your life, you know. And now I've learned to dance with that, where I know that when I'm just not quite on, I don't need to suffer that anymore. Mm. I can look at it and, like you said, stare down the barrel. And it's less even staring down the barrel and more like knowing I'm getting loaded in a can and, you know, that I'm going to get shot into the next thing that's going to be even better than what's there.
We'll return to the discussion in just a minute. Participate on a live call where I will be interviewed by revolutionary man Jason Gaddis on February 19th at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. Go to www.revolutionaryman.com to sign up for this free call, and I'll answer your questions live on a ton of topics. If you can't make the call, you can download it the next day. I look forward to speaking with you. Now, back to the discussion. Help me understand, like, because I imagine, you know, law school isn't that fun for a lot of the guys in law school, even if they're passionate about it. How do we tease apart, like, how did you tease apart, like, this is just a drag and it's hard and it's challenging and, like, well, shit, this just isn't my path. Like, yep. how do you you know, kind of get clarity there?
Great question. Well, I'll tell you, I didn't have it at the time. At the time, the biggest challenge that I had was that I doubted myself. And because law school is challenging, and going to any law school is challenging. And, you know, actually where I was actually one of the least competitive. I was at UC Berkeley, which is, you know, pass, fail, no grades. One of the least competitive, but you know, premier law schools. But I got to a place where I was clear on one hand. I think we always know. I think there's a deep part of us that actually knows.
Uh-huh.
But what happened for me was then there was the part of me that wondered, was it because I couldn't hack it?
Mm.
You know, was it because I didn't think I was smart enough? And then, of course, there was part of that voice in my head. And I was nowhere near confident enough to say, no, it doesn't have anything to do with that. So when I dropped out, I actually had this terrible, you know, dropping out and this feeling of, you know, clarity on one hand, and then the, am I just a flake and a loser on the other?
Right.
And of course, my network of friends were all telling me, dude, just stay. You're at a great school. Just stay at least through the first year.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, dude, I can't. And I like to say if there's anything that differentiates me, it's I have a really, really low threshold for doing stuff that I'm not into.
Mm. I think that's key because so many guys, like there's so many validators there on the way. I'm in a top 10 school. I'm doing this. My network, you know, all the people in my network are saying stay, blah, blah. But there's something, I don't know, for me, it's in my body. There's something of just like, oh, I just can't. And literally, for you, you throw up on the 405 if it's not a good decision.
Yeah.
But is that your experience too?
Dude, no doubt. I threw up when I moved into law school too. Finally, I moved up from Southern California up north and literally yacked when I moved into my apartment. You know, it's like, we know, you know, it's a cellular thing and we have this gift. And I got sick one other time when I was almost closing a deal with a mentor of mine, maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago to run one of his businesses. And it was a great opportunity, et cetera, but it's just, there's this intelligence we have that when we learn to pay attention to it, it's there, you know? And the challenge is that as you were saying, our network, our peers are usually going to coach us into the safer path because they aren't taking the risks and they don't want to see us suffer and they don't want to be the ones to tell us to take the risk and see us fall down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the challenge of really tapping into conversations like this. And, you know, all the great teachers tell us you have to take the risks, you know, that the failing life is the one where you don't go out and aren't willing to fail, you know, and all the greats you want to succeed, double your failure rate, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Be willing to go out and judges.
I don't know if it's if this is good advice or not, but I have a test that I put myself through in those moments where it's like, well, if this was a book, if I'm reading Tripp's life, what's the next chapter that's going to be the most like, all right, you know, here we go.
That's
like,
awesome.
And sometimes that's just a test of like, and which one's going to be like, oh, great, four more chapters of the same shit,
yep.
You know, like,
yep.
So there's this
yeah.
part in there of like, how to, what if my life is a wonderful story that, you know, fires me up and fires somebody else up? I don't know. I just kind of put it in that context.
Let's go on that theme, because I mean, a lot of the teachers that I'm studying right now talk a lot about everyone talks about that. And I've never heard it described that way though, of, you know, you're the script writer and the director and the actor in your own life. And you can choose to walk off stage and walk onto a new one at any time. But the way you're describing it is genius, which is, you know, okay, I'm writing this chapter. Do I want this to go on for another four chapters, or would someone close the book and quit reading it? You know, that's awesome. Well, that's a great way to look at it. Another thing I've been into is the question, what would I do if I wasn't afraid?
Mm.
So, you know, just what would I do if I wasn't afraid?
Yeah.
And that usually leads to a pretty clear answer. And that's all these things too. It's a practice. It's a learning to trust ourselves and being willing to make, quote, mistakes in the process of kind of honing in our intuition,
yeah.
You know, and not to think it's going to be a perfect, this is what my intuition told me. I did it and it worked out perfectly. I've had so many things I was passionate about for a day, you know, or for an hour or for a week or for a month that just weren't it. But I went at them, you know, and I trusted it. And now what I've found is that in my life, I pick up the pieces of the things that worked, but left the things that weren't quite right.
Yeah.
You know, and as I evolve and make life more of a game, Ralph Waldo Emerson says, life is an experiment. Make as many as you can,
mm-hmm.
you know, like have fun. Like let's get good at writing the script of our lives and turn off the worries about the past or the anxiety about the future and just go with where our heart's taking us right now and trust that process, you know?
I can imagine the guy out there listening like, Jesus, man, we're talking about quitting jobs and moving places and all that. It sounds reckless. And I want to like reframe it that this isn't something that just happens overnight. You had actually tuned yourself to do something very quickly with Zods. You know, you went through, as you said, a train wreck or two to get up to that point to where you trusted it. But this isn't a reckless process. In fact, I've found that if I stay in touch with myself, stay in touch with that part that, you know, that intuition, as you said, it's more course correcting than it is wiping the slate clean every 6 months kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to be clear too, your distinction is right on, but you get to a point where the trains are running smoothly, oftentimes by making a couple train wrecks. So, you know, and for me, what I found is there's two things there. I think that if people aren't willing to take the risk and blow up their lives at times, and this is all an individual decision, obviously,
right?
But at times, that's what's necessary. So I'll leave that there for a moment and then come back to the way what I've found to make it graceful and to make it a course correction and a slight, oh, wow, okay, yeah, that wasn't quite on, and just a here, there, finding the rhythm is through my practices. It's through my consistent working out. It's through eating well. It's through meditating. It's through getting proper rest. It's through taking care of myself and doing the little things day in and day out where now, you know, of course the anxiety still comes in at times of, oh, God, am I doing this or should I be doing that or what if this happens?
Mm-hmm.
And it's going back to the practices, you know, that allow things to really kind of evolve. But I think it's that balance of sometimes we do need to take some pretty great risks and the only one who can make the decision on that is us,
yeah.
You know. And getting to the point where we trust ourselves is key. And part of that is being willing to make what might be viewed as silly decisions and what might in fact be silly decisions, but they were yours.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
You learn from them.
Tell me more about the practices that kind of lit me up there. Like, oh, what does he mean by that? It sounds like something I can, you know, learn, or it's not just this stab in the dark. What do you mean by the practices? Yeah.
So my practices have evolved a lot. So when I was running my first business at 24, 25, 26, the market crashed in 2000. We had 45 employees. We were burning $500,000 a month, running out of money really fast. And you know, we had literally just hired the CEO of Adidas to come in. I became the president, but basically kept on running the business. And it was just gnarly. You know, we had 45 people. Payrolls were, are we going to hit them kind of thing.
Mm.
And I was not balanced. And I picked up Way of the Peaceful Warrior by Dan Millman.
Uh-huh.
And two things came out of that for me. One, I needed to get in charge. I needed to get balanced in my energy. right? I needed to start exercising and I needed to eat better, mm-hmm. right? So I needed to consistently do that. And then I wanted to get to a point of equanimity. So I made it a game where I trained hard again and started eating better and just realized that if I was going to weather the storm of the market crashing and having these many employees, we had to fire 30 of them, lay off 30 of them, which just sucked. Cool. It was just an amazing culture and just not a fun time.
Yeah.
And to weather the storm through the sale of our event, we eventually sold the business. And I remember Steve Wynn, the CEO of Adidas, I'd pick him up from LAX and, you know, he was mentoring me. And I remember one thing he said, it's not how you start something, it's how you finish it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it was all about how do I get to the finish line on this, you know, and make it work. And I realized my practices at that time in my life were I've got to exercise, I've got to eat well, and I've got to look at getting to a point of balance. So I used a game where when I got off balanced, you know, if a deal didn't come through or whatever the situation was, it didn't go the way I wanted to, I would look at it and see, God, I'm totally off balance right now. How do I get on balance as fast as I can? Hmm. Right. Just make that a game. So those are two practices at that time. Now, you know, I've created a life where, you know, I'm out here on sabbatical in Bali and I jokingly say I left my iPhone and my personal history in LA and just I'm all about rewiring right now and just and you know, spending a year, 18 months is gonna turn out to be 18 months, just creating my kind of oasis and my perfect rituals. So now I get up at 5 a.m. and I meditate for an hour, and then I move for an hour and then I eat. Eating's really important for me. A certain amount of density in my calories because otherwise I'll kind of fly away in my head. I journal every morning. And those are my absolute 5 to 9 right now. It was 5 to 8 and I just stretched it to 5 to 9 of just honoring that and realizing that it's all about practices. And of course, that's where I am right now and this is my life. You know, it's kind of like, for me, these things are like Tiger Woods hitting golf balls, you know?
Right.
Like, it's what he's getting paid to do now. So for me, I take it pretty seriously and it's my commitment. But, you know, whether it's 10 or 15 minutes of meditation and just 10 or 15 or 30 minutes of movement in the morning and 5 or 10 minutes of journaling instead of a half an hour, I found that those practices, I can correlate how good or great of a day I have based on whether I did. I haven't missed a day of meditation in 175 days. I haven't missed getting up with the sun in 175 days, but I've missed some days of journaling. I've missed some days of eating well. And those are the days that I'm just not quite as on.
I'm really disappointed in you, man. I just think you could do better, man. You know, I do too.
You're absolutely right. I'm capable of more.
This interview is over, man. Come on, step it up.
I gotta go.
Well, no, I think, you know, what I like about that was that even in the midst of, you know, talking about your company as it was, you know, basically kind of going down the tubes there, wait a second, what's most important? I got to get back in my body. I got to take care of this vessel so I can do this work. Whereas most people are just like, screw my body. This is way more important right now. How did you turn that corner? I mean, what's really the thing that helped you put your body and your mind on the top of the priority list?
Yeah, honestly, dude, like, you know, literally burning $500,000 a month with a couple million dollars in the bank and watching that just get burned. Right.
Yeah.
And just seeing, you know, the $1 million in the bank, $750,000 in the bank and needing to come up with cash that you don't have. You know, I literally vividly remember being on a board call, laying on my office, you know, like kind of ground with a couple of my dudes working for me with a pounding migraine. Mm. You know, it's like 5 p.m., like shut the blinds, just feeling just how I don't want to feel, you know? So for me, it wasn't too hard of a correlation to make or a connection to make that, huh, I probably better take a little better care of myself.
Got it.
It really wasn't an option, you know? I mean, you get to a point where, for me, it was just clear that I had to step up my game in order to manage the stress that I had created in my life, you know?
And you brought some discipline to it because it's not like, you know, somebody's like, you know what, man, I'm going to get it going and then, I'm going to get really behind this and then they get it to a certain level where it's acceptable. The amount of suffering or pain in their life is acceptable again and then they step off the practice board again. But you were like, no, this is, I'm keeping this. That's amazing to me.
Well, let's be clear though. I mean, this sounds good, right? At the time, and this is 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So where I am now, I don't even recognize the person I was then. That was the very beginning of my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were still dramatic highs and lows through that process and nowhere near the equanimity that I have right now. But it was the beginning of my practice.
Yeah.
And it was enough that I was able to sustain it with a great team to get through, you know, a really challenging time and close a deal and move on to the next part of my life and kind of exhale. But, yeah, I was clear that I was going to give it and make it work. And I wasn't going to bail on our business and on the investors who'd put their money in and make it work. And it, to make it work, it was clear that I had to step up my game. But just, I want to be really clear. At that time, I was, if I was a golfer, I was still shooting in the mid-90s. You know? It wasn't a very sexy, graceful, you know, process, but it was enough. I got through the round.
Got it. Good for you. It, you know, and I just want to say that what I like is you found the practices that worked for you. Like there wasn't just some big formula out there that everybody should follow, but can you say more about like, how did you find the practices that worked for you?
Okay. Yeah, this is awesome because this is, if I have to capture a theme of my work right now, this is it. Is I think that I've gone through my life looking for, okay, what is the solution? You know, what's the weekend workshop? Who's the guru I can learn from that will teach me everything I need to know?
You one of those self-help whores? Is that what that is?
Sure. You know?
Oh, good.
Yeah, right. I mean, I think we're always looking outside of ourselves for that answer, which is tied to this impulse to get rich quick or to fix ourselves quickly. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned is it isn't about that, and that it's always about me. And it's in the sense of I am my greatest teacher and what works for me. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's been a really cool evolution. I love, you know, absorbing wisdom from my favorite teachers, and I that's where I get so many great ideas, and then I try them on and see, okay, does this work, does this not, but just getting to a point where for me it always comes down to what's the one thing. Like a big part of my practice is in as I'm teaching more and more, it's okay, what's the one thing you know you need to be doing in your life that you're not doing right now, right, that you're just out of integrity on, right? Mm-hmm. There's always one thing, you know. And then I also ask, what's one thing you're doing that you just know you need to stop doing, right? That's just not working for you.
Got it.
So for me right now, I still go to ESPN more than once a day. It's like, dude, get your ESPN fixed. That's cool. But you don't need to go there more than once. That would be Stephen Covey's quadrant number 4. Not important, not urgent. You're distracting yourself, you know? So it's cool to become aware of that, right? Mm. And I literally wrote that down this morning. It's like, okay, cool. That's another area that I'm going to polish this month. That's mm-hmm. one of the things I'm removing. I'm going to quit distracting myself and quit wasting time. And then looking at the habits that I'm building and, you know. But anyway, what's one thing? I love that way of just getting better is looking at that. And we always know that. And that's not by opening a book randomly to a page and saying, I'll do whatever that page tells me. It's, God, I need to be, you know, a better husband right now. How can I do that? You know?
Yeah. It's like, where's the low hanging fruit in my life? Where's the one thing that I'm actually motivated to change?
Yes. And that I know will give me the greatest positive benefit. Brian Tracy describes it that way. What's the one thing that will give you the greatest positive benefit if you start doing it habitually now? Mm. And then you make 100% commitment to it. That's another big thing for me is, you know, a lot of different people say that 95% is a bitch, 100% is a breeze. So when you make 100% commitment to something, like I did to my meditation practice, I meditated, but it was never 100%. So there was always the, will it be this morning or today that I flake? You know?
Right.
And then you have that out, it's tough to build a habit. When I made it 100%, things become easy. So I would say, what's the number one thing that's going to give you the greatest benefit? And then are you willing to commit 100% to it? And then go 30 days and don't flinch. Mm-hmm. Even when you don't want to, or your little self is telling you it's a waste of time, et cetera, do it.
Something sounds more manageable about kind of picking the one thing. I mean, when I coach guys, I got some of these integral guys that I coach, and they're like, here's my 4-quadrant approach, and I'm going to do 18 practices and blah, 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 and I'm going to knock this out in the next 60 days. And I'm like, pick one. Like, let's just get one that you can really do, and let's have some success. And it's not to take away from an integral approach, but it really is about just focus. And for me, it's about kind of making it hard to fail.
Yep, exactly. Create successes. Well, Ken Wilber himself says, you know, don't be a metaphysical glutton, right? We all want to get quick, fast. We want to improve 100 lines of development at once. You know, we've got to have the 18 practices that are all firing. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, we're at a stage of development, right, that is what it is. You're gonna transform yourself minutely day by day. And if you try to make a radical transformation of 10% or 20% different type of human being, you're just going to fall back to where you were, then feel like an ass because you didn't stick. Versus, you know, the tiny little improvement that you can make in your day by doing this one thing well is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's the essence of my practice. And then George Leonard, you know, his book Mastery, I just love. And just embracing the idea of diligence, patience, and persistence. I've gotten in trouble in the past where I've wanted things fast in my business or in my practices and in my evolution. And just getting really clear that, dude, you know,
it takes a while.
And I love working, and I love, you know, creating, and I also don't need to burn myself out anymore, you know. And I realized that, you know, the quadrant two to go to Covey, it's all about investing in the longer term and having the diligence, but the patience and the perspective to look at it over 3, 5, 10 years instead of 3, 5, 10 days or weeks or months, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That was what I was getting too, is like, pick the one thing and then be patient. Don't try to do it all at one time. And I think that's the hard part, is the momentum, or the thing underneath it is like, I don't like being here in my life. I don't like the way my life is now. I want to change it all right now. And I need to change it now. There's that hunger versus like settling for the long ride. We're in this for the long haul. So bring that patience.
Well, then it's, I think, just a matter of the maturation process. And a big part of my practice is, how do I maintain the intensity, right? Because I have, you know, a lot of times we can turn off the intensity and it's like, oh, well, you know, I don't like myself enough or love myself enough, so I'm just going to relax into it. It's like, that's, you know, cool. But how do we maintain the intensity with the maturity to say, look, I'm going to be diligent, I'm going to be patient, I'm going to be persistent, and I'm bound to be successful, right? To quote, you know, S.N. Guenca, who I did Vipassana meditation with, 10 days of silence, right?
Right.
And he said dozens and dozens of times, work diligently, diligently, work patiently and persistently, and you're bound to be successful, bound to be successful. And he said it in his Burmese accent, and it would take him like 5 minutes to say that, right?
Oh, yeah.
You say it bound so slowly, you know?
Bound to be.
Yeah, bound to be successful. But like the 58th time I heard it, I got it. You know, and I realized, oh my God, that's been my biggest challenge, is I've wanted things too fast. So then I would go back and forth between being diligent and being lazy or burned out. Mm. And I would be patient and impatient. I'd be persistent and I'd give up. And I realized if I just string them together, diligence, patience, and persistence, with time, I'm bound to be successful. And then I just go back into the day and the whole idea of just love the journey, right? Like really embrace the journey. And George Leonard says, when you're on the path of the master, you love the journey so much that for every mile you take on it, you hope your destination is 2 miles further away. So you quit trying to get there. You realize that you just love what you're doing.
Tune in next week as we continue our discussion with Brian Johnson, and be sure to visit thenewmanpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.